quantity to be looking into. And the kind of idea which I'd like to talk through today is that what happens if we think about the behavior of physical systems, maybe the dynamical behavior of the wave function of a particle, for example, is governed by its ability, by abuse of terminology, to process signal. And what do I mean by that? Imagine we have a physical system which is immersed in some environment. And we model the environment in the form of the specification of the Hamiltonian for the system. And what this might mean in practical terms is that the system interacts with its environment either via photons or maybe by other means. Now, such a system may typically be in a state of indefinite energy, which is a priori not very stable. And through this interaction, system may try to figure out, again by abuse of terminology, where it should settle, so to speak, which stable configuration should the system end up in, given that situation. Of course, there is no active transmission of information between the environment and the system, and that's what I mean by communication without transmission. Maybe a simpler example to understand what I really mean by communication without transmission might to take an example in social science. For example, imagine a situation where you are thinking about, let's say, investing in some stock. And of course, what you want to know is what's going to happen tomorrow. Okay? And of course, no one knows what's going to happen tomorrow, but you have all sorts of information around you. You might read newspaper, you might read internet pages, you talk to people, and so on and so forth. And that's how you gather information. That information is not going to be perfect. And based on that information, you make your best estimate of what's going to happen tomorrow. So that's a process of, so that's how you process the noisy information to try to come up with the best estimate. And there, since no one knows what's going to happen tomorrow, clearly no one can even transmit that information. And yet the information is out there. Okay, so that's sort of what I mean by communication without transmission. That is to say, there's no active way of transmitting information back and forth. Now, before I start talking about quantum system, I would like to just have a very quick overview of the idea of processing information, okay, in a slightly more dynamic setup. So typically, going back to the traditional situation in communication theory, someone transmits the signal, and then someone receives the signal, but along the way, there's a noise. So what you receive is signal and noise, which combines in some form. So you have two unknowns. And based on that, those combination of signal and noise, you have one known. And using that one known, you try to estimate the unknown quantity. So I'm going to show you a simple model, which is in here. So the model has got various ingredients. The signal in a typical situation may well be a time series, but I wanted to keep things simple. So I'm going to assume that the signal is some unknown random variable, x, with known density function, p of x. Okay. Now, I'm also going to assume, for simplicity, that a noise is superimposed onto the signal linearly, so in an additive way. And I want to have something which is simple, so I'm going to use Brownian motion to model my noise. Okay, so I have a signal plus noise. And furthermore, I'm going to assume that the signal is revealed at a constant rate given by sigma. So sigma is a bit like a signal-to-noise ratio. Of course, in general, this could change over time, in which case you have integral of sigma. But if sigma is constant, then you have sigma times t. So we have sigma times t times the signal x plus the Brownian noise. So x is not known, b is not known. And that's your observation, which I call xi. So the problem in signal processing is that given the value of xi, what is your best estimate of x? Okay. Now, of course, the word best depends on your choice of criteria. And I have this quotation mark, best here. But fortunately, it turns out that for very wide range of criteria that one might impose, the best estimate agrees. So people don't even debate about this. And the best estimate is given by, not surprisingly, the expectation of X given the history of the observation up to time t. Now, in this simple example, although it's not immediately obvious, this process happens to be Markov process. It's not so important, this happens to be Markov process, which means the specification of history I can discard except at the very end point. And so I have a conditional expectation of X given the value of xi at time little t. And what that means is that I want to take the expectation of X with respect to the conditional density function. Now, conditional density function is not too difficult to calculate, but it's a bit tricky. But nevertheless, the calculation simplifies considerably if we apply Bayes formula. And here's the Bayes formula in this context. So Bayes formula allows you to flip the conditioning. And the reason why this helps the calculation is because if we fix x, then conditional on value of big X being fixed, our observation process is a Brownian motion plus constant. So we know the distribution that is just a Gaussian. Okay, so if we flip the conditioning, we can immediately write this down. So we can substitute that back into our Bayes formula. And that gives us the conditional probability of X given the observation up to time t. Okay, so that's the key main idea in signal processing. Okay, and using that pi, so I'm going to simplify notation slightly. So I call it pi sub t of x. It's fairly standard notation in probability theory. And the best estimate of unknown quantity, again, is a process in little x, which I call x sub s, x sub t, sorry, is given by this ratio. Okay, so that's all fine. But now I would like to look at the dynamics of this conditional density process. Okay, now, that is, I want to derive the differential equation satisfied by this object. Now, I already have the solution to that differential equation, so why do I need the equation? Well, the answer is there's a bit of a surprise which emerges from that. So if you have seen Brownian motion, you know exactly what that means. If you haven't, it doesn't matter. You can use your physicist's intuition. So the way I differentiate this is that I take the derivative of pi. I have c here and t here. So the derivative will hit these two quantities. So what you do is you Taylor expand this function viewed as function of two variables. And you say dt is small, so dt squared equals zero. That's all you have to do. The only thing you have to be slightly careful is the fact that Brownian motion grows like square root of time and not like time. And what that means is that small increment of Brownian motion is not as small as you might think. More precisely, dt squared is in fact first order. So when you Taylor expand, in the xi variable, you have to retain second order derivative term. So if you do that and put terms together, you get a differential equation satisfied by the conditional probability process. Okay, and so small increment of pi is proportional to x minus its the average times pi itself, and then there are terms proportional to the xi term. Proportional to dt. There are some common terms which I put together here now. And the first surprising result is that if I take this expression here, dxi minus sigma times x times dt, and I define that to be dw, or to be more precisely, I define w, so I integrate this, w to be xi minus this expression. And remember, x is this rather horrendous expression here, so that's a priori very complicated object, but the first miracle in signal processing is that this very complicated process, in fact, is just a Brownian motion. Okay, and it took many years for people to figure this out. The reason is because there are many characterizations of Brown emotion, and people tried different characterizations, which were quite difficult to show that this is a Brown emotion. But eventually, after many years, people realized that one characterization due to Levy, which says if W is on average constant, and if W square is on average linearly growing in time, then W has to be a Brown emotion. And that one can't show from this complicated expression. So what that means is that the small increment of pi is really induced by small increment of this Brownian motion W. But this W is not noise, and that's sort of important. And it has got a name in the literature of signal processing. It's called innovations process. And the name, apparently, according to Thomas Kailath, was coined by Norbert Wiener at around 1960. And basically, what W does is to measure the arrival of new information. So going back to our information process, XI, our observation, the point is we receive information as time progresses, and that information we receive contains what we already know as well as what we don't know. So if we remove everything that we already know, what remains is given by this W process. Okay? And another important observation is that it is W that derives the random evolution and not the noise. Okay? That has got profound implication, it turns out, for example, in the banking world. So for the past 40 years, banks have assumed that the random movement we observe is induced by noise. But of course, what that means is that noise-dominated situations where you don't know anything. Okay, so the way in which things are modeled in the banking world is to assume that everyone is going to go out there and put all their money into a stock that they have never ever heard of, because. So that's, of course, not the way things work in reality. So W has got a very deep meaning in many applications in social science, and I like to see if it has got nice implication in quantum mechanics. So before I move on to the quantum setup, I just one other slide, which is identical to what I have already talked about, except the random variable, the unknown signal. Now I call it H as opposed to X, and I assume that it's a discrete random variable which takes value EK. So this is later going to be identified with Hamiltonian energy eigenvalues. So I'm just changing the notation. So I have a random variable H with taking values EK with probabilities PK, and I construct the information process as before. So now the conditional probability is not a density function, but it's a probability that H taking value EK K subject to the information you have, and following exactly the same calculation, you get the same result, except integration is replaced by summation down here. Okay, so this is the pi I'm going to use in my next slide. Okay, it looks kind of complicated, but it's not actually too bad. And now I consider a system modeled by a finite dimensional Hilbert space, with a specification Hamiltonian operator H and eigenvalues EK, and eigenstates EK ket vectors. And then I take this pi, okay, and take the square root of that, and I throw in this unitary term, and I add up to construct a state. Okay. Now, the first result that we found was that this wave function, randomly evolving wave function, solves a known differential equation introduced by Dizan in 1989, known as the energy-based stochastic Schrodinger equation. And it's given by this expression down here. Okay, so the so-called energy-based stochastic Schrödinger equation is the simplest known dynamical model for state reduction in quantum mechanics, where you can read the rest. Now, there's some interesting properties. So you see there's a parameter sigma appearing in here. And the way I constructed the problem was to view sigma as a signal-to-noise ratio. And one can take the point of view that sigma is like a coupling parameter you might be able to adjust. Or then you might take the point of view that sigma, which has got unit of 1 over energy times 1 over root time, ought to arise from fundamental constants of nature. And based on sort of heuristic phenomenological argument, in 96, Lane Houston proposed that sigma ought to be given by that number, which involves the gravitational constant, the Planck's constant, and speed of light. And it turns out that that's the only combination which gives rise to a reasonable number for sigma. And with it's given by 1 over sigma squared times the initial energy uncertainty of the system. So that one can take the point of view that this is a model for state reduction when you do measurement, which is fine. But that's not the interpretation I'm trying to convey. The interpretation I'm trying to convey is that this should be there at all times. Okay? And you might ask, well, surely, if you have such a stochastic evolution, you can distinguish that from a deterministic unitary evolution. And this is a question that Stephen Adler addressed. And what he was able to show, he knows, I guess, phenomenology, which I'm not too familiar with, but he looked at a range of specific systems, and he chose this particular choice for the sigma squared. And what he found was that, so this is the result of Houston, but using that choice of sigma, what he found was that for a small quantum system for which you might expect quantum coherence to continue for a long time, indeed, the time scale is extremely long. On the other hand, if you have a quantum system which is coupled to a macroscopic system, then the initial energy uncertainty is amplified. So the collapse, if you like, is virtually instantaneous. So put it differently, what he found was that, as far as he was aware of, there's no known system upon which we can apply measurement and study such that you can distinguish this evolution equation from Schrodinger's equation for which sigma equals zero. Okay? So if you assume that this is always going on in the background, at least you don't have to start worrying about what happens if you make a measurement and so on and so forth, because it's always there, and it all depends contingent on the scale of energy uncertainty of the system. So if it couples to a macroscopic system, then uncertainty is amplified. So that's the idea. And now, since we have a solution, we can simulate the solution explicitly. And the way to simulate the solution, you can simulate the state, you can simulate the Hamiltonian. Basically, we have an explicit representation, which is a function of time and xi. But xi is a function of time and Brownian motion. So the way to simulate is you run a Brownian path, and you toss a coin and pick a value of h. And that would be one particular realization of xi. You plug that into the formula, and that gives you the state. And you can do that for expectation value of the Hamiltonian. I'm going to show you a few pictures. So now, in the simulation, we fiddled the value of sigma in order to gimmick what may happen if the initial energy uncertainty is large or small. So here, we change the values of sigma. So for small sigma, this is like sigma equals 10%, then for a long time, the energy expectation value remains more or less constant. That's sort of quantum coherence lasting for a long time. As you increase the sigma, things get more random. This is sigma being 100%. And but this is a system, I'm sorry, of a two-level system. So that's the ground state energy. That's the first excited state energy. And for sigma being 500%, some of the states have already collapsed to one or the other for 1,000%, perhaps happens earlier, and so on. Now, this is for two-level system. You can also do this for infinite-dimensional system, and you can simulate the evolution of wave function that is implied by that. And that idea, which is applied to in a perturbation-type situation, so you imagine you have a particle in a square wave potential, a particle in a box, and at time zero, you expand the size of the box. Okay. So this is like instantaneous approximation type analysis you find in traditional textbook in quantum mechanics. But we assume that the evolution equation is governed by that energy-based stochastic equation. So here's an example. So at time zero, you have ground state of a particle in a box. So that's the x direction. That's the time direction. And at time zero, you, in this example, I think you expand the box by a factor of 2.5. And you start from initial ground state. But at time zero plus, you're no longer in the ground state. And the system is going to fall into one of the stable eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. Here it's kind of interesting, because after a short period of time, the system, I'm so sorry, but this is a square of the wave function. I'm so sorry. So modulus square of the wave function is positive probability. So after a short period of time, the system nearly enters into the second excited state. But that's not quite right, it seems. So it then enters into a nearly ground state, but not at ground state. But apparently that's not right either, and switches back to the second excited state, and so on and so forth. Here's kind of opposite situation where... So that kind of behavior you can systematically analyze. Right, so earlier I mentioned about a mixed state situation. So in all those classic work, if you like, there's a kind of interpretation that you have a random motion for the pure state, but the real state of the system is given by density matrix, which is the expectation value of the pure state. Okay. So then if you view density matrix in that way, then people talk about unraveling of the Lindblad equation. So you get the Lindblad equation for the evolution of the density matrix, which is deterministic. And then you can find a stochastic counterpart for pure states, which gimmicks that kind of dynamics. And that's the idea which was sort of around. But quite recently, so now this is sort of result of the last 2 weeks. Before that is result of 10 years ago, but so you can ask the question whether that's really feasible when you regard density matrix as really fundamental object. And in some ways, all you need is a completely positive map for the density matrix. And there's nothing sacred about density matrix evolving in a deterministic way. So put it differently, can we have a stochastic dynamical model for the density matrix, which gives you more general evolution equation? And the answer turned out to be yes. And the equation we propose is given by this equation. So we have the unitary term and the Lindblad term, which is a familiar object where Lindblad operates as a Hamiltonian. And additionally, we have a random Brownian evolution given by this expression down here. Now, for sure, if you take that stochastic density matrix and take its expectation, let me call it mu, then mu evolves under the familiar equation for the density matrix. But we propose this as a sort of generalization of those energy-based stochastic equations for density matrix. And then one can prove a number of properties. So again, starting from arbitrary initial state, it will evolve into one of the stable energy eigenstates with the probability given by the usual quantum rule. But the probability you don't put in by hand. It comes out from the dynamics. But you can also prove that the average density matrix diagonalizes, where diagonal elements gives you the probability of ending up in any one of the energy eigenstates. But with probability 1, this density matrix will turn into a pure state at one point, which is the energy eigenstate. Okay? So one can prove that with probability 1, reduction does occur. But with, on average, you get a diagonalization. For diagonalization, you might call it decoherence and so forth. But decoherence doesn't tell you whether collapse has occurred or not. It just shows that the off-diagonal elements goes to zero. But one can show that, prove that with probability one, this goes to one of the energy eigenstates, a pure state. So those are the proper, so, and furthermore, it's trace preserving and positivity is preserving. And I think those things I've already mentioned. So it's an example of completely positive map. And the solution can be obtained as well in closed form. So again, we have this highly nonlinear stochastic differential equation for the density matrix. But with the help of information process, we can get exact solution to that differential equation. Okay. How much time do we have? I have 5 minutes, of course.
No, you have seven. A bit more. No, that's right. Ten
okay.
minutes. Ten
yeah,
minutes.
I don't need that much, actually. So, I mean, it's Friday. We had a long conference. So I don't want to go into the too much detail of the next topic, but I just want to highlight one sort of result. So one can ask the question, is Brownian motion sort of fundamental or not? Okay. In some ways, Brownian motion is fundamental in the sense that if you take if you take a Brownian motion,
there's another chalk.
If you take a Brownian motion and replace this by B of t, so if you can think of little t as time and big T as clock. Okay. If you make this substitution, it turns out that you can generate almost all processes by a suitable choice of a clock. And it's known as time change of Brownian motion. So you can generate almost everything out of Brownian motion by a suitable choice of your clock. Okay. So from that point of view, Brownian motion is sort of important. But apart from that, Brownian motion is only one example of many, many stochastic processes with the property that you have stationary and independent increment. And the class of stochastic processes having that property is known as Levy processes. And one can ask whether the Brownian model can be generalized to Levy processes. So Levy processes, there are many of those. You know that you have heard of Brownian motion and Poisson process. So Brownian motion turns out to be the only continuous Levy process. Poisson process jumps by a unit of one. If you have compound Poisson process, it jumps by some random amount. And apart from Poisson process, all other Levy processes have the property that at any finite time interval, there are infinitely many infinitesimal jumps. So it's a process, so it's a very rich cluster of processes. And the question is, can one generalize these models, which goes outside of the Brownian motion? And for that, we had to redo the theory of signal processing for Levy processes. And it turned out that that had not been done in the signal processing community. So we had to take a step back to work that out. And the way to work that out involves some mathematics, which probably is sort of too much to go through now. I just highlight the result. So it turns out that the Levy process is characterized by a quantity called Levy exponent. So if L is any Levy process, the expectation of E to alpha, parameter alpha times L, is always given by exponential or function of alpha times T. And if you like, that's like a defining property of the Levy process. So for Brownian motion, the function psi is 1/2 alpha squared and so on. Okay, so that's the Levy process, that's what psi is. And then with that in mind, you can construct dynamical reduction of the density matrix driven by an arbitrary Levy process, where what I have is this information process, which I can't write down explicitly. So it turns out that for Brownian motion, the natural way to combine signal and noise is to add them together. But for all other Levy processes, the natural decomposition of signal and noise is not an additive decomposition. So it's difficult to write down the precise form of information process without going into the details. But bottom line is, you can have a reduction for any Levy process for which these guys were defined. And again, you can also talk about the expectation value of that density matrix and call it mu. Now, mu will will obey a deterministic differential equation. And you can work that out. And the result is given down here. Basically, it's a limblet type equation. But it involves what is called a Levy measure. So Levy measure tells you how many jumps do you have for these Levy processes. But it doesn't matter anyway. The bottom line is you can generalize Brownian motion to any Levy process without any difficulty. So that's the list of reference directly relevant to the talk. If anyone is interested in the topic at all, but wouldn't like to go through many papers, just want to look at one paper, then this paper highlighted in red covers all the mathematical background, starting out from introduction to probability theory and whatnot. So in summary, if I may, it's been just 2 minutes, yeah?
5 minutes.
So, it's a point of view which one could take that somehow the state evolves in a way such that it tries to process the available information from its environment in such a way that it will reach to some stable configuration. And this kind of idea has been applied in different contexts, mostly in the context of social science. And the success that we saw there sort of gave me the confidence that maybe it's not restricted to the behavior of people, but rather it might be a powerful tool to investigate sort of natural systems. Now, just finally, to give a credit, so the idea that if we want to describe behavior of people, what you need is to use the tools of communication theory. That actually goes back to Norbert Wiener. Already back in the 20s, he was interested in trying to understand the functioning of the brain. And it was in that in that context which he was thinking about how to represent the key functioning of the brain, and he realized that it is to process signals. Everything we do is essentially boiling down to either consciously or subconsciously process the data we receive and proceed based on our best estimate. And mathematics of that idea, however, was not developed until 1940s, when at the time England had no defense against German airplanes. It was impossible for the Brits to shoot down any plane from the ground. And the United States felt a need to intervene, so they came to Wiener and told him to do something about it. And it was in that context that he developed the mathematics behind this prediction theory, if you like. And so he pretty much understood the impact of the information, and indeed, in late 40s, he even published a book which is entirely on the implication of second law of thermodynamics to our society, where he tries to predict how the society is going to develop over the next 75 years. So he already had a lot of ideas in the social science context, and although he didn't actually implement anything, and we did implement in the social science context, and we saw many successes, and then we felt it ought to be applicable beyond that. And if that is the case, then we have sort of coherent information theoretic language which describes the dynamics ranging from very small systems to very large system. Anyway, that's the end of my talk. Thank you for your attention.
Yeah, thank you very much. Any questions?
With a naive question, I mean, can your results be understood also in the context of this measurement problem and collapse of the wave functions and things like that?
Is there a problem? the thing is, so the wave function spontaneously collapses. Yes. So that's what I was trying to say. Yes. So whether you measure or not, it will collapse. But if you have a quantum system for which the energy uncertainty will be fairly small, then what you might call quantum coherence may last for a long time. So it looks like unitary. So that's this kind of situation where things don't change. Every tool I'm using here is classical probability theory. I'm not using any quantum probability. So it's purely classical.
So this means that when people with this measurement problem could maybe say this is just when you get the collapse because you get the interaction with the classical environment. So this is not what you should do.
I'm not so sure what quantum probability really means, but the point is here, the idea I'm conveying, which ultimately may prove not to be the right one, but the idea I'm trying to convey is that this kind of random motion is happening at all rates. Okay? But at short time scale, if you have a coherent quantum system, then that randomness is not detectable. But if you want to couple that system with a large macroscopic system, then owing to the amplification of the energy uncertainty of the system, the reduction becomes instantaneous. So you don't need to talk about measurement or not measurement and so on and so forth. If you take that differential equation as the underlying evolution equation, then that's it. Yeah, that's so.
Any other question? Is it feasible to define a system that you could actually test this on?
Good question. I don't know. I'm not aware of any. The reason is as follows. The model works too well. So the point is, if you literally make a measurement, then owing to this effect, you know, you recover what quantum mechanics says. So you know, everything is consistent. So you can take the phenomenon postulate on one hand and say there's a jump or whatever. You can take this as a model, and you know, every prediction would be sort of consistent. And I haven't thought too hard about possible experimental test to see any deviation. But in some ways, the fact that it works too well is some of the downside of.
Yeah, I was just thinking that people have thought about this in the context of other stochastic collapse theories.
Yeah.
Other people in the room know more about this than I do, I think, like the GRW.
Yeah, of course, there are many other, you're right. I didn't digress. There are other types of stochastic models which I have my doubts. So this is you can ask how Jizan derived this equation. Well, I don't actually know. But here's my guess. If in quantum mechanics, if you assume that the state vector in Hilbert space has got norm, which is strictly conserved, and you have energy expectation, which is conserved, and if the evolution equation has to be deterministic, then you're nailed down to Schrodinger's equation. If you relax the third condition and only impose the energy conservation and strict norm conservation, but allow, for example, Brownian motion to generate the dynamics, then you're pretty much nailed down to this equation.
Mine is a continuation of the previous question. How about macroscopic quantum systems like superfluids or superconductivity would still apply? Wouldn't it collapse very quickly, or how do you handle that?
Well, as I sort of admitted, I'm not a phenomenologist, so I don't know too much about it. I refer to others paper on that, but as far as I know, he concluded that there is no known system for which you can, if you assume this is the dynamic regression, you get an inconsistency. So I presume, that, but I don't know enough of the rest of the process.
David?
So when you have measurements, you can view them as like maybe projective or PLM measurements, or you could have a unitary modeling of a measurement process. So if you were to try and do a dynamical description of a measurement process, would something like this like put a bound on how quickly that measurement can occur, or how would you understand it?
It sort of partly depends on the choice of sigma. If you believe in this choice of sigma, then that's the time scale. So time scale doesn't mean it's the exact time for the collapse, but after passage of that amount of time, then you're pretty much in a close proximity to one of the energy eigenstates. And yeah, maybe I'm not quite following your question.
So instead of describing the dynamics of the system, trying to describe the measurement apparatus and the system as a composite.
Yes, but if you were to do that, of course, the energy uncertainty is going to be pretty massive, I presume. So I presume you get, in effect, instantaneous reduction.
Okay. The early quantum state diffusion equations by Yuzhan and Percival, they were shown to be equivalent to conditional evolution under continuous heterodyne detection measurements. Is there a similar sort of a similar equivalence with your stochastic your stochastic equations?
Yeah. Okay. So that's a good question. I think translating that question is to say, whether this information process can be linked to the ideas that Passbrew and Design has had. Quite possibly, I haven't actually thought about that particular aspect, so I don't know the answer, but that's quite possible. So the information may have direct implications, since that gives you the solution to the equation equation. So there has to be a direct link, but that's an interesting.
So this examples and what you're doing seems to be rely heavily on being in a non-relativistic setting. Do you think that you have some perspective on relativistic versions? Something like this?
Again, a good question. Short answer is I don't know. There are some ideas. So in a relativistic context, I mean, people have tried to generalize the relativistic context. But none of those seem very convincing to me. But we have sort of developed what we call relativistic Brownian motion, where Brownian motion is defined not as a function of time, but as a function of space-like hypersurfaces. So it's a bit like sort of a Schrödinger-Tomonaga type picture, where you sort of label space-time in terms of some given choice of space-like hypersurface foliation, and then you assume that you have a Brownian motion, by Brownian motion labeled by the surface as opposed to by time. And that line of thinking seems to give something that might allow us to go forward, but we haven't really done much in that direction.
We could take one last question while we set up.
To recover your stochastic Schrodinger equation, could you just couple, say, your qubit to is there a certain system that under the global Schrodinger equation could be a very large Hilbert space you couple it to, but the global Schrodinger equation breaks down to the stochastic one just on the qubit? That's just a classical system, which...
Yeah, I mean, if you take the average and look at, I guess, the dynamic equation for density metrics, I guess you can, because we have limited operators, which in this case is that Hamiltonian. But for the pure state, probably not. So average of the pure state projector, probably yes, but not for the stochastic equation.
let's thank the speaker again.